My Worst Date. I'm Cassie.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Christina.
And this is just another episode. I have nothing else to intro it with.
I did not know where you were going. I was like, you already said it's my worst date.
I never know where I'm going.
What's happening?
Well, welcome to another episode.
I do want to tell the listeners how Cassie was like, legitimately furious. You texted us and then I responded, but Christina did not respond, and you were so annoyed about it that you brought it up again like days later. You're like, no, we're not letting this slide.
No.
That because you're in Germany, I think sometimes maybe like there's certain news that doesn't penetrate, and Willy Wonka gate did
not
hit
even that.
For you.
What it is, I'm never on social media, right? And, yeah. And the joke is, you guys know this, so I rely on you to be my social media update. Mm-hmm. And when you didn't tell me, and so here's how it started at my house. I showed Chris a picture of the dune thing I sent you guys, and it was just like a pushed up pile of sand, and it was like Glasgow launches its new dune exhibit, and I just thought it was really funny. And Chris was like, you know why that's hilarious, right? And I was like, because it's just funny, it's a big sand pile. And he was like, no, Willy Wonka. And I was like, yes. How dare you guys not
sorry
brief me.
I really didn't realize that was going to be something you were so interested in.
I was not on social media a lot either, because I had to prep for the conference that I went to this past week. So I missed it completely. So I was like, what the hell is she talking about? And then I entered the fever dream that was that exhibit. Oh. I was like, do you realize if I was a kid, the fucking nightmares I would have had?
That fucking thing that was behind the mirror.
So what? Let's tell the listeners. I mean, at this point, this news is a few weeks old, so I'm sure that a lot of the listeners already know what we're talking about. But what happened was,
in case you're me,
yeah,
and you missed
in
it.
Glasgow, there was this whole thing. They used AI art and they made it look like magical. And they were like, this is going to be an immersive Willy Wonka experience for like for kids. Right. And they did. They made it look really cool. As a parent, you know, I would have been like, oh, that'd be cool to take my kids to this like magical Willy Wonka world.
45
doll hairs.
Pounds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Per person.
Yes.
To get one jelly bean.
And half a cup of orange juice or some shit. Like, it was like...
In a warehouse. This is... I know my friend Sarah is listening. When we were kids, my friend growing up, Sarah and I, we used to have all these like really stupid, like wild schemes. Like, we should make a carnival in my front yard, and we'll like all the local kids can come.
You,
like,
you want to know what my idea was whenever I was a kid? My very similar idea to that was I swear to God, the papers probably exist somewhere because I was writing out my ideas. Sure. I wanted to put on an all kids production of Cats for the neighborhood. I was
never
like, and we will sell tickets.
I have to know if this is like a universal experience, because Cassie, I did the exact same thing. I remember me and my friend Marta, her older sister Eva, and a bunch of the neighborhood girls, we were like, we're going to do a carnival. Like, we're going to charge people to
charge
come in.
Kids to get in. Yeah.
And I remember it all fell apart because Eva threw a brick at my foot. So,
oh, fuck
this
that,
business deal is over. Oh, my God. Speaking about business partnerships gone wrong, I am listening to the Behind the Bastards about Steve Jobs right now. Holy shit, did I not realize that guy sucked so much. Like, I did not know that he was... I mean, I knew he was, like, shitty to Steve Wozniak. But I'm like, oh, no, he was, like, an all-around kind of bad guy. I never knew. Yeah. I feel like because I was so young when he passed away, that, like, it was all that, like, hero worship after he died. You know, that I didn't realize that. I was like, oh, no, he was, like, actually kind of a bad person. I'm blown away.
Yeah.
I'm blown away by this information.
Yeah. No.
I have never watched any of the movies about him. I've never really gone down that path. I guess it's funny to me. I think America, we have this kind of culture of like kind of worshiping people who've made cool things.
Yeah. Or are super successful, like, or are like, super rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rich. Yeah. That's really what it is. And I guess that like, I don't know. I just don't, I know. I never really thought about him too much, to be honest. I've only thought about Wozniak because he was on My Life on the D-List and was hooked up with Kathy Griffin for like a date.
Oh my God. That's kind of hilarious. Like, everything I've heard about Steve Wozniak is that he's just like the sweetest baby angel.
Goofball. Yeah. Yeah, like he's a big goofball.
Yeah.
And he was on their date. It was really weird.
That feels like it would be a strange pairing, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, she also dated Andrew WK on that show too. I don't remember like what it was like. She was trying to be hooked up with people. It was very bizarre.
Interesting. But well,
you're right, Cassie. That is like that hero worship of people here in America, just because they're rich. Like,
yeah,
is a weird value system to have.
And it is strange because, you know, there is that snakes in suits kind of thing about how there is a percentage of psychopaths in the world. And that like most psychopaths, like when you think of psychopaths, you think of like serial killers and stuff. But like most psychopaths never kill anyone. But a large percentage have like very high achieving jobs, like are CEOs of companies.
Right.
Because there's a certain ruthlessness and like disregard for people's feelings and like lack of empathy that you have to have in order to achieve a certain level of success for most people. Like there's a reason why Steve Jobs was a multimillionaire and Steve Wozniak was broke, right? Like, because it's like he cared about, like, they talk about it in the Behind the Bastards episode where Steve Jobs did things specifically to cut out a lot of the designers from having shares in the company and making money. And Steve Wozniak knew that and gave his own money to make up for them not getting what they were due, right? So it's like you have one very empathetic person on one side and one who really lacks a lot of empathy and might fall somewhere. Not to say that I know that Steve Jobs was a psychopath or anything. Like I'm not saying that, but there is a certain lack of empathy I think you have to have in order to be that ruthless in business, you know?
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is why I can never, I don't think, be CEO.
No, I don't think I could.
CEO of stuff.
CEO of My Worst Date podcast with my co-CEOs. Yeah. So that leads me to this HuffPost article that I stumbled across on Instagram. It had some like clickbaity headline that made me want to go and read the article. Sometimes that stuff works on me.
Sounds right.
But the title of the article is "This is what it's like to really love and leave a narcissist." And it's funny because the beginning of the article, like the first line in the article is, "Not long before my ex and I broke up, we were reading John Ronson's psychopath test together. The book provides a checklist of psychopathic traits, including a grandiose sense of self, a lack of empathy, a parasitic lifestyle, pathological lying, glib and superficial charm, and a lack of remorse. He looked up from the pages in realization. Wow, I think I might be a psychopath," he exclaimed.
Ruh-roh.
And at the time she says that she felt like that was, you know, kind of like an outrageous thing for him to say and didn't really buy into it necessarily. But as time went on, she would identify him as a narcissist and he would identify himself that way, which is interesting. And so she goes on to detail how things started to go wrong in their relationship, how anytime he had success, it was all due to his like his genius. But anytime he had failures, it was someone else's fault. So things just started to...
This is ringing
bells. Is it triggering you?
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went down that list. It's like the grandiose sense of self. Mm-hmm. Parasitic... Mm-hmm. Lifestyle.
Check.
Mm-hmm. No remorse. Mm-hmm. Like if they do anything wrong, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Yep.
And so like at the end, it became clear to her that like he had been cheating on her throughout the entire relationship. And that he was really not remorseful about it at all. And in fact, like, basically told her that he never believed in monogamy and only committed to it because, or told her that he would commit to it because it's what she wanted. And he said, quote, "I only hit it because you felt it was wrong." And he couldn't understand why any of this was such a big deal to her.
Wow.
And so whenever she asked him, like, well, why didn't you just, like, if you were so unhappy with me, because he was constantly pointing out the things he didn't like about the relationship and obviously didn't want to be monogamous, why didn't you break things off with me? And she was stunned that he very matter-of-factly, like, with no sense of, like, shame or remorse or anything, basically said that staying with her, he was like, "I stayed with you because doing so enabled my lifestyle." Is like, I could live off of your income. And she said that he actually told her, "I was abusing you, manipulating you, and taking advantage of you. And if I stayed with you, then I could continue to do that." Like, so I wasn't going to break it off.
Imagine being so self-aware, yeah, but also so...
Because she broke up with him in the end. Mm-hmm. He didn't end things with her. Like, and he would not have ended things with her. He would have just gone on treating her badly because it worked for him.
Yeah.
I cannot say this enough. No relationship is 100 times out of 100 better than a bad relationship.
Yes.
Like, yeah. If you don't have an equal partnership, if you don't have a cheerleader, if you don't have somebody that just gassing you up like day in, day out, and somebody that's like, "I'm fucking in the trenches with you," don't, like, that is such a miserable place to be in when you have somebody constantly nitpicking you and year in, year out, like, what that does to erode your self-esteem and your happiness. It just breaks my heart.
Yeah, and they were together for 5 years. And that's what she said was, like, that she was mourning, but she wasn't mourning the loss of the relationship. She was mourning that she'd spent 5 years of her life with someone who did not care about her at all.
And honestly, 5 years sucks. But there's people who spend 10, 15, 20 years of their lives, their whole lives in these relationships and spend all their beautiful years wasted on somebody who treats them like shit and is using them.
You know, we have the entire world's knowledge available like in our pocket every day. If you even have a glimmer of, "I think this might be fucked up," Google it. You know what I mean? Go check it out. Because a lot of times what also happens, I know, is that you just weirdly get comfortable in it. And it's day in and day out. It's very difficult. It's almost like a fog.
There's no shame.
No.
Being there.
No.
But we're not. Yeah. I don't mean this to shame people for finding themselves in this for 10, 15, 20 years, whatever. Like, I can fully understand exactly what you're saying, Christina, where in which there's comfort in just what you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just being, you know, it's just, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And there's not, like, I don't think people are being complacent. I just think that people feel like they have to really fight for a relationship. I think we've been sold this narrative that if you're not fighting for your relationship or you're fighting for your marriage, then do you even care? That's not real. Yeah. I have to be honest. I think if you have to fight for your marriage that fucking hard, then maybe there's something inherently nothing to fight for. You can't fight alone either.
Right. You know?
That's
like,
it too.
Because she might have been fighting for it, but he wasn't. Like, he wasn't in that relationship for anything other than to get out of it, to suck her dry. He's a vampire, right? Like, he's going to take everything that he can from her and then disregard her, you know, when it's no longer useful or it's no longer benefiting him. And so the other thing that I would say is, like, trust your instincts, because yes, there was other stuff going on. She was being gaslit constantly, you know, and that can make you question your own sanity. But like she says, like, I had suspected that he was cheating on me throughout the relationship. yeah. And just didn't dig into it, you know? And it's like, I think trust your instincts as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing too that can really hurt being able to get out or even being able to like recognize what is happening is how isolating being with a narcissist is. Mm-hmm. And like you'll wake up one day and realize like, oh, I'm not super close with my family anymore, or I don't have any really close girlfriends, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. or friends in general. Like your support system is just gone. So like then it's so and much or easier the person- to gaslight you, mm-hmm. you know?
Absolutely. And or the person that you are closest to, that person talks bad about. Like mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. your ex used to talk awful about me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He did. And yep. because he knows how threatening I was to his relationship. And that's happened with me and other female friends as well. I'm the kind of person who I'm going to force my love on you. And I'm going to tell you how fucking great you are and how much you deserve better than whatever you're being treated. Yep. Especially if I see it, I'm going to call it out. I'm going to say it. And that's very threatening to people who like to be in control of relationships. It is.
Especially it's when they're getting something out of it, you know, like if they don't have to work or, you know, they don't have to have a job or contribute or, you know, it's like you said, Keegan, threatening his way of life. So, yeah, it's
tough.
But yeah, I think on the same tone of the fighting thing, I think a lot of people feel like when they fight with their partner, that fighting with their partner is fighting for their marriage. I think that this is a narrative that is not necessarily true. And I'm not saying you should never fight with the person you're with, but I just think that fighting all the time isn't a sign necessarily of a good relationship.
There should be balance.
That's
right?
Not a great thing.
It's like, there's never going to be disagreements or you're never going to have a bad day or anything like that. Cause you will, there will be tough days. There'll be things that piss you off about the other person sometimes, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to like work through those things
for sure,
but it shouldn't be all the time,
like not pushing
and it shouldn't be that person like constantly making you feel like everything in the relationship is your fault and taking no accountability at all, you know?
Yeah. And also the way that you fight too. It's like, Eric and I fight, but it's like, constructive, like we have a conversation.
It's
and
more
we
conversations.
Disagree. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
It's not.
It's
like
not screaming matches,
name calling, and
right?
Stuff.
That's
and
that's really it. It's like, yeah, you can fight and
that's
disagree.
What I mean.
Yeah,
that's what
and
I mean.
Like and get angry with each other, even like. But at the end, it should be constructive. You should learn something. You should be able to take accountability and apologize. And it should never devolve into name calling. And stuff like that. Yeah. That to me is crosses a real line to me whenever you start.
Yeah.
And in equal or even more higher amounts, you should exactly have what Christina says, and that is your fucking cheerleader. I mean, I honestly, I'm literally moving to another country. Mm-hmm. I could not do this without having somebody who cheers for my successes.
Yep.
You know, even over their own sometimes and over their own, you know, questioning what his next step might be doesn't matter because he wants to see me take this amazing step because this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. That's a cheerleader. That's somebody who is just, and equally, if he had an opportunity like this, I would do the same for him. And I think that's what we know about each other. And that's the kind of that cheerleading that is a real thing. And you've been bringing that up a lot lately, Christina, and I think it just can't be understated.
Well, you realize it when I can the relationships from my past to the one that I'm in now. Like what it is, like I've been with someone that resented any success that I had, you know, and you don't realize what that does to you because then you try to make yourself smaller.
Yeah,
because you don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to make them feel uncomfortable or bad about themselves. So you just shrink yourself. And then when you're finally with somebody that's like, wow, you're fucking awesome. Like, oh my God, look at you go. Yeah. Like it just is, it's so different. And that is really what I've pinpointed as like, why is this relationship so much different and so much better than any other relationship that I've had in my life? That is the quality that I see that that's such a difference. I have somebody that is not threatened by my success, but in fact cheers it on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Happy International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Wow. Well, this doesn't really lead us into a good FMK, does it? I mean, we're not going to FMK psychopaths, so we have to.
No.
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 I mean, we could do people who've played psychopaths.
Sure. Christian Bale.
I was going to say Christian Bale, but then also too, you have, oh gosh, what's his name? Who played opposite Christian Bale as the Joker? Heath Ledger.
Yeah. You've got, mm-hmm. Evan Peters mm-hmm. played Dahmer.
Oh yes. Oof. Yes. You got, yikes. Oh yeah. This is morbid. This is hard. Ralph Fiennes was in Red Dragon.
We have to go to the actors. Yeah, of course. Like we could not do the characters, obviously. But you know, I'm actually okay with those actors if we want to FMK those three.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. So who is it? Christian Bale?
Christian
Bale, Evan Peters.
Anthony Hopkins.
Oh Lord.
Oh God.
Sir Anthony Hopkins. Okay. You know what?
I'm down to throw him in the mix.
Silence of the Lambs, one of my favorite movies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and he was fantastic.
Of course, he is amazing.
So good.
He's also a knight.
Yeah.
I love Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Don't we all? Okay. Wow. So Christian Bale, Anthony Hopkins, and Evan Peters. What a wild mix.
I know exactly what I'm going to do.
Wow. Christina's committed. Here we go.
I'm in it.
Get it.
I am going to marry Sir Anthony Hopkins.
I love that.
I knew this.
I want to be royalty. Mm-hmm. I want to live where there's a fancy library that smells of books mm-hmm. and history mm-hmm. and eat fantastic, drink fantastic, have fun conversations, have very fancy dinner parties. Mm-hmm. It's the lady of the manor. I'm loving all this for myself.
I am too.
I'm going to fuck Evan Peters.
I love that. I love that choice. Okay. I love it. I think he's hot.
Fuck Evan Peters because I'm like, I know he's got to be just packing. I'm sorry. I know it in my heart.
I do too. I think that there's a vibe. There's a definite vibe. And he's not flashy about it. It's not like a... I feel like it's big dick energy, but not the way that like Pete Davidson mm-hmm. has big dick energy. Like it's a different, he just has it and he knows it and he goes through life with a quiet
confidence.
What do
you think their signs are?
That's a good question. I feel like
he is a flip you over kind of person. He's one of those people that it's like surprisingly strong where you're like, how are you that strong?
Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Holy smokes.
I feel like he's an air sign, Evan Peters. I get air sign energy from him. Mm-hmm. And I get earth sign energy from Anthony Hopkins. No. Is it not? Cassie knows.
No, you are correct.
Really?
Actually, both of those.
I'm getting so good at this. Amazing.
Yep. Christian Bale, fire.
Fire sign energy. No. Okay. We got that one wrong. All right.
Okay. So... Evan Peters, January 20th.
Oh, just barely Aquarius.
Just Aquarius.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then
beginning.
Just on the cusp. Yeah. But come on. That man is an Aquarius. Christian Bale. No, I'm going to do Anthony Hopkins first because you got him right. December 31st. He is a December Capricorn. Okay.
Ah.
December Cap.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Christian Bale. I feel like you never would guess this in a million years. In fact, because I also thought fire sign for sure. January 30th.
So also an Aquarius. You know what?
Wow.
I feel like that makes sense. He's weird. You know, like he's weird in a different way. And I'm like, all right, yeah, I got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
I gotta be honest, all of this works for me. I'm very happy with all the choices in my sign.
Okay.
Yes, we know I love a Capricorn and we know I love an Aquarius. Mm-hmm. So
you happy know, with all this. I feel like I really like Christian Bale. So this is not a fault on him at all, because I think he is one of the greatest actors of a generation. Like, he's incredible.
Incredible.
And
yeah.
Love seeing interviews with him too. Like, he has an accent that I feel like I always forget that he's like got a northern English accent. But I actually think I'm gonna do the same thing Christina did.
Okay.
I think I'm gonna marry Sir Anthony Hopkins. Yeah. I kind of love that. I kind of feel like I would fall into my, like, you know, young woman married to a rich man energy. You know, yes. Like, I'm going to wear, like, nice outfits.
Dude.
Yeah.
Mob wife. My wardrobe. Aesthetic is really in right now. You know, so you just go full on mob wife.
I feel like I'm going to end up being one of those, like, country English women who, like, walks around in riding pants. You know, like, I'm just always on
yes.
a horse.
And gloves. Yeah. And holding yes. holding gloves. You're never going to wear them. Yes. You're just holding
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to have chickens. I feel like there's just going to be... I feel like there's a lot of warm nights by the fire in my future. I kind of love that for me. But you still get to go to the events. I'm still going to get to go to the Oscars. Yes. Like, I'm okay with being kind of like a trophy wife. And I feel like he would never treat me like a trophy wife. So I like that for myself. I think that that is a nice, comfortable future. I've seen enough.
When he describes you to his friends, he's like my intelligent,
absolutely.
Smart.
Yeah. But you're going to look really good on the red carpet in pictures.
Oh,
and I've
so
watched
good.
Enough Real Housewives to know now that I'm like, you know, no shame in that game. It's a nice life. I don't have to work. Amazing.
Have you heard that saying, Keegan, on TikTok? That so there's a lot of creators that are saying hard wig, soft life. Because apparently,
oh no,
I love that. No. Oh, amazing!
They're like, whenever they see like rich old white dudes, they're like, they like mess their wigs up because they're like hard wig, soft life. I'm like, oh my god,
I love it. No. You know, no, I just true. I feel like he would really love me too, and like, you know, we would have a good time together. And yeah, I'm gonna fuck Evan Peters. I just think that there is like there. I know we say this all the time on this show, and it probably gets annoying, but like there is an underlying current of something dark in there that is gonna come out in the bedroom.
An intensity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised with you both because I'm going to do the same thing as Mary.
Okay.
I'm going to marry Sir Anthony Hopkins as well. I agree wholeheartedly on everything that has been said. I as well will be walking around with just gloves in my hand for no reason, directing traffic around my estate, you know, and, you know. So I love this for us. I think that I love the stability of it. It feels comfortable and...
Yes.
And nice and like you said, warm
and safe.
And, and I'm gonna fuck Christian Bale. I think you guys are missing the boat. If you want to talk about weird,
true
energy, that man is gonna give you the weirdest sex of your life.
It's gonna be good,
but it's gonna be like so weird that you're gonna be like, the fuck.
Yeah, I agree. I actually do agree. I think it's a similar energy to Evan Peters, but a little bit more playful, maybe.
Right.
But he's got an intensity.
A little
to him.
Different.
He's got an intensity to him.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a darkness that is not hidden about Christian Bale. I feel like there is a tinge of darkness just right on the surface.
I think for me, what it is about Evan Peters is there's a certain like aloofness. You know what I mean? That I'm like really attracted
you
to.
You also get with...
Yeah, same.
You also get this thing with Evan Peters that you don't see him happy that often. So you feel like you a huge win.
Make him
laugh?
You
can make him happy.
Oh my God. I'd feel so accomplished.
I kind of feel the same way about Christian Bale too. Like I feel like if you got like a smile out of one of these, you're just like,
yeah,
I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like I made him laugh, you know?
Well, I love all of this for us.
Yeah. Truly. Hey,
well, we do have
a new patron.
We have a couple
That's
of new
right.
patrons actually. So, I want to give a big shout out to Rachel. Rachel's name looks familiar to me. I think I've seen her around on our socials. So welcome to Patreon. Rachel is also from Australia. So sneak peek about my tainted love. I hope you enjoy it, Rachel. Then we have Michaela Nicello. I hope I'm saying your last name right, but thank you so much for joining us, Michaela Nicello, for joining us on Patreon. We are so excited to have you both. Welcome to the Worstie family.
Yay. Well, hey, do you guys want to take five and then we'll come back with stories?
Yes.
Sounds good.
And we're back. Okay, I will kick us off with stories since I have the tainted love this week. I met a guy on Hinge. He was very interested in meeting after light chatting for a few weeks, but didn't want to do so at a bar or restaurant. Instead, he wanted to meet in a park. I went and he seemed fine, said he had just moved to the city and was crashing with his cousin. After our meeting, he continued to message me, call me pet names, say he knew we were meant to be, and convinced me to let him come over.
No, oh no. The ick.
Moving too
no.
fast food. Too fast yeah. food.
No, this isn't a walk to remember.
What a good time to join our Patreon at the $5 level because...
Oh, Lord.
Wow, that movie. Against my better judgment, I did and was creeped out by how overly familiar he was acting like we were already dating. This is the first time he comes over.
No, sir, no.
That is such a red flag. You know what I mean? Because people that... like you that much, like right off the bat, I'm like, what's
the
going
turn on for me?
What's going on? What's missing in your life or within yourself that you're doing? Right. Like, what do you need from me? Why are you doing
I haven't even given you all my best material yet. Like, why are you, what am I giving you to like at the moment? You're freaking me out. You know what I mean? He also, this is the biggest ick. He also commented on my wine collection saying we'll have to drink my nicest bottle on our anniversary.
Okay, no, absolutely not.
No. After a while of him trying to cuddle me, Cassie's going to crawl out of her fucking skin. Cuddles with a stranger who just came over.
Who just mentioned our anniversary and I'm not.
I politely asked him to leave. Afterward, he sent me overtly sexual messages and I asked him to stop contacting me, at which point he lashed out, called me names, and commented on my weight. Just right out of the playbook. Yeah. Right out of the playbook.
Just
you're so hot.
Nice guy playbook.
You're so hot, babe. And then the second you're like, no, thank you. Then all of a sudden, they're calling you a bitch.
Yep. It's literally.
Fat bitch.
Mm. Uh-huh. Always.
That is always. Such a universal bad date. Because we've all been on that one.
And so she blocks him. A couple of weeks later, I logged into the app and he came up as I was swiping, claiming my neighborhood as where he lived and even posting a pic of the view from my balcony. I reported everything to Hinge and they very quickly took care of it as he violated the user agreement with name calling. I think that's a good piece of information too. Mm-hmm. Is like you can report to Hinge if they do that kind of playbook textbook incel thing. And if they violate the user agreement, you can get him kicked off of Hinge. But like, how fucking creepy is that? Like he came over, took a picture from her balcony and then got back on Hinge, changed his location settings to be
That's
her neighborhood
so fucking creepy.
And posted a picture from her apartment.
So what the fuck
That's
is he
so
going
creepy.
To do? Like
I don't
when
know.
He has another date and she's like, this doesn't look like the dude.
Not
what
go
is
over
going
to her,
on with
go
people.
Over to her place. Never have
and
them come over to your
from
place.
Her.
Yeah. Keep it moving. Keep it moving constantly. I don't know, man. But I just thought that was so creepy. Like, and I feel like that is always something to be aware of. I think there's a reason why it gives us the ick whenever someone is overly familiar too quickly, because I feel like this is always what happens. They always turn on you super fast.
Yes.
Like at the second you're just like, whoa, wait a second. You know what I mean? And I feel like it is maybe the beginning signs of that like narcissism thing where they're seeing if they can charm you and get away with it. And then they get angry when they can't, when you don't fall for it.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I love that. Christina, you sent that thing, or was it you, Keegan, that sent that thing this week that was like my favorite things about being a woman?
Oh, that was Christina. That was me. Mm-hmm. He was amazing.
Oh. This might be one of them, mm-hmm. making incel men upset.
Yes.
Oh my God. In that list, when she says that one of her favorite things about being a woman is telling men they can't be doctors.
They should. Yeah.
It's like, it's amazing.
Touching everything in the store and saying, cute.
Nice.
It was so perfect. I was like, yeah, that's a pretty complete list. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So she says, we had hooked up a few nights prior and decided to go on a date. At dinner, she was saying some crazy sexual things that I was a little like, okay, whatever. Then she wanted to fuck in the bathroom, but it was like 6 o'clock on a Tuesday.
What's wrong with that?
Okay, like, also, where
this
are
is
you?
An Olive Garden.
That's what I was about to say. I'm like, what restaurant are you at 6 p.m. on a Tuesday? You're like, you can't. Listen, there are
people
a lot
are in
of places.
People are changing babies and shit.
Honestly, there are a lot of places where, like, you know, it would be sad to fuck in. But like, yeah. 6 p.m. in an Olive Garden bathroom has got to be up there.
Yeah, it's got me looking in the mirror and being like, where are we going? In this life, mm-hmm. this is what I'm doing.
Do you love yourself?
Yeah, like as you're getting railed and looking at the wilted lettuce that's like on the floor, you're like, I need to reevaluate things. Like,
seriously, that little moldy mop smell, you know?
Oh God,
yep. Ugh. Then she told me she had to get an ultrasound the next few days to check on some health concerns, but that she was probably going to be okay. We had a glass of wine, so she was okay to drive to the next bar. And her car was a borrowed cop car from a friend. There is a lot going on.
There's a lot to unpack. Here.
Wait, what?
A borrowed cop car from a friend? Like, is it currently in use? Or is it like a retired car? Like,
I have 100 questions.
If you had even a glass of wine, I feel like you shouldn't be driving a cop car. I don't know.
No, I think that's exactly the kind of car you should be driving if you want to get away with it.
Well, that's true. You won't get pulled over. That's true.
Oh,
that's true.
Oh, my God. So she gained this cop friend when she got a DUI a few years back. She proceeded.
Time out.
Oh, Christina, you undersold this.
This is just bananas. And it's so sad. I'm like, there's a lot going on. So first of all, you wanted to fuck in the bathroom.
What is wrong with people?
Why can't we fuck in the cop car?
True. I mean, might be willing to do that, actually.
Oh my God.
We consider it.
I know. Yeah. Seriously.
I would consider that just for the experience. Just to say I did it.
Just to say I fucked in a cop car. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I do want to.
She proceeds to hit 100 miles an hour, and we weren't even on the highway. As we bar hop, it becomes clear that she knows just about every bartender and bouncer we encountered. And she admitted
that's not good.
She used to party pretty hard.
Ma'am.
I'm sorry. We just met and you asked if we could have sex in the bathroom
at
the restaurant. Like, you still party.
It's a Tuesday night.
You still party.
It's a Tuesday night and you know all the bartenders and bouncers of a Tuesday night.
If they still know you, then you still party. I'm sorry.
Exactly. I used to.
Not enough time has passed.
I used to last week. I used to party pretty hard.
But I've changed.
You're
I've turned over a new
cop
leaf.
Car. I have a lot of questions.
She's like Need for Speed through the neighborhood. Like,
wow.
Fast and Furious is in front of the bar. She's like, I used to party, not anymore.
Woo.
Whatever. We all go through our shit, I guess.
Whatever.
Then we go to our final stop and it's karaoke night and she sings My Heart Will Go On to me and brings me on stage.
On a Tuesday.
No.
On a Tuesday.
No.
She kisses me and all the men cheer. Gross. So I was uncomfortable. Of course, she has a million friends at this bar and her story about her health concerns start to unravel. So then she goes on to say she probably has cancer and this is the last time she's going to see all of them.
What?
My.
What?
What in the walk to remember is seriously going on? This really is.
Is she lying about having cancer?
Oh, that's what is being implied. Yes. Mind you, she hadn't even been to the doctor appointment yet. So she's pretty much WebMD'd herself, and she's like, I have cancer.
It's probably cancer.
We all have cancer if we WebMD it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
God, what a wild thing to be like, this is probably the last time I'm going to see you. Like, you haven't even been to the doctor.
Don't fall in love with me.
It's scary. Don't fall in love with me. You have to promise not to fall in love with me.
Promise not to fall in love with me.
Oh my God. She starts crying about her cancer. So I'm like, okay, I need to bring you home. So we get a taxi and she's in my lap crying like insane. The taxi driver even prays with us.
It is a walk to remember.
Oh no. Also, I feel like we just kind of breezed past this, but like it was never explained how she got the cop car. Like, you met the cop, your cop friend, when you got a DUI. Become friends? I need to know, like, what happened there? Like,
she's got a wild personality, man. She seems fun. She seems real fun. Real fun. Finally, we make it to her place, but she forgot her keys, so she bangs on the door. We had hooked up a few nights prior, and she had mentioned she had roommates, but I never saw them.
Oh, no.
Well.
Is her roommate her family?
Turns out her roommates are her parents.
No.
Oh, no.
So her dad starts screaming at her in a language I don't understand. Oh, no. And I get to her room, and she finally comes in and tells me he's mad at her for drinking. Anyways, well, end up leaving her place at 5 a.m. and she blows up my phone, accuses me of having a secret boyfriend.
What?
She also posts our dinner date on Facebook and tags me with a caption that implies we're a couple. I ignore her for a day until I tell her we can't hang anymore. She's actually really understanding about it. So yeah, that all happens.
Wow.
Wow.
That's so much.
It's a wild ride.
Wow.
And okay, so this day started at 6 p.m. and ended at 5 a.m.
Yep.
On a Tuesday. On a Wednesday morning.
Did you Tuesday not have to Wednesday work the morning. Next day?
I hope
you went
not.
Home at 5 a.m.
People are wild. People wow. are wild.
Wow. Just crying in the karaoke bar. I have cancer. I know it. You're like, ma'am, you haven't even been to the appointment yet.
Dude, and the shame receipt I would have as like the waves of what happened the night before start hitting you when you're hungover in the morning and you're just like, did the taxi driver pray over me yesterday?
Yeah. Like, and then if you don't have cancer, is it because of the taxi driver? Do you have to find
this
guy?
We can safely give him credit. Yeah.
I think so.
Oh, my God.
You got to find that guy.
And also, where's the cop car? Did they just leave it?
They just abandoned it. He just left it at the karaoke place.
With her keys in it, I think.
Oh,
just
my God.
Yikes.
Incredible.
Yikes on Incredible. Bikes. Okie doke. Well, match with a girl. We met up at Applebee's. She showed up with a girlfriend. She showed up with her girlfriend.
Half price
which apps. Was odd. As she didn't make mention, but I was able to get past it. Her friend excused herself for the evening after about a half hour, but creeper check, not sure, whatever.
Definitely, that's what was happening there.
Totally
okay.
what that was.
I mean, you should
exactly.
warn, I would let the person know, like, hey, like, this is just what I do. I bring someone with me just to make sure you're not a weirdo.
She's heading out, exactly.
And, and also to sit with you long enough that they can describe your face to a police sketch artist.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. In fact, I'm going to take
more discreet photos.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Take a, you know, just a kind of look like you I'm discreet. Scrolling on my phone, but I'm actually taking pictures of you just in case. That's a good friend.
Exactly. We hang out a bit more at Applebee's. We go for a walk. And then the night, leaving on our own ways. Fast forward, I'm working out. She's at a baseball game with some friends, texting me that she's bored and wants me to pick her up. I finish my workout and head over. I'm parked a good ways from the door since the game is still on. I try calling her and her friend picks up and says she's in the bathroom, but they'll be right down. She and her friends finally show up and they shove her out the door at me, clearly plastered. and shut the doors. I try and say, whoa, 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 wait, what the fuck?
I didn't sign up for this.
Her friends laugh and run away.
Yeah, they're like, not our problem anymore.
Oh my gosh.
Security refuses to move, so I can't let her back in. And they say, she's your problem now, man. She's drunk and she's not allowed back in. Mind you, I don't know where she lives. She doesn't have her wallet or phone with her, and she's blasted and falling over. But being a nice person, I decide I can't just leave her there. It takes us an hour to walk to my car, a 10-minute walk. Because she keeps falling over and stumbling.
No.
Finally, I get her in the car, and she passes out.
Surprise drunk date is, I mean, the absolute worst. If you're just expecting like, oh, I'm going to hang out with this girl. I had a good time with her.
She's bored at the game. Yeah.
Dude, and being around drunk people when you're not drunk is the little worst.
Awful. Dead weight. The dead weight that happens when, like, if it's taking you an hour, it's because, like, you are carrying
this woman. She's fucked up. Yeah. You might as well have carried. You might have got there faster if you just picked her up
Put her on your back, piggyback ride.
Not sure what to do. She's passed out in the car now. Not sure what to do. And still living at home, I decide I need to drive around a bit to make, to maybe sober her up. Less than 2 minutes later, she wakes up screaming and thrashing to let her out and tries to open the door. I yell to stop, that we're moving. She proceeds to kick the rear view mirror off and passes out again. Fuck am I going to do? I decide to call my mom and confess. She offers to help.
You don't have anything to confess about. Like, I didn't do anything.
She offers to help and just to let her know what I need and don't put myself in a bad situation. This would be me. All right, Dylan, mom. Just bring her here. Come on, let's figure this out. Mm-hmm. Get her out of your car. It's unsafe.
Yep.
I continue driving home. Three exits from my house. She wakes up and mumbles, I don't feel very good.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I bet you don't.
You're going to be paying for the detailing that I'm going to have to do for this car.
Thinking quick, I grab a plastic bag from the back seat and hand it to her. She proceeds to puke over the top of it, over my dash.
Yeah, of course.
In the bag. She looks at me and mumbles, thank you. More puke all over me and passes out.
Oh, my God. Girl, how much did she drink?
Oh,
is it 99 apples?
He has no... Probably.
Keegan, you were talking about the way that last chick was going to wake up the next day. This chick, she hopes that she got blackout drunk so that she doesn't remember the details.
You know, I wonder how frequent of an occurrence this is. If her friends were like, nope, we know how this goes, you know, didn't even, they were just
you're bored, call your boyfriend.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Take her away.
That guy you saw? It's great. I'm covered. The car is covered. She's covered. I'm racing home now. I call and tell my mom to meet me in the driveway and what's happened. When I show up, I get out and clean myself up. My mom goes to help her. Come on, honey. I think you've had too much to drink. Let's get you inside so you can take a shower and sleep it off.
What a mom.
She slowly wakes up and thanks her before stripping butt naked in the driveway.
Girl. It's like... Get it together. My God. I've never been this drunk.
It's 3 p.m.
I think I can safely say... Oh, what did you just say, Cassie?
It's 3 p.m.
It is 3 p.m.?
Broad daylight.
Oh, no.
Neighbors are home. She walks into the house past my parents' friends. You can... Get up at... Oh, thanks.
Oh my God. Oh no.
Come on in, sweetie. Susan, who's that?
My God.
3 p.m.
I will never recover from this. I would never recover from this. Oh my God.
She ends up sleeping in my room, me on the couch. I get woken up at 6 a.m. by her saying, hey, can we talk? I proceed to explain. I proceed to explain what happened and that she needs to use the landline to find a ride because I got to work and we're done. And she owes me for car detail.
That is right.
And don't you dare wake up my mom.
That woman is a saint. You have put Susan through enough.
Do not. Don't you dare wake my mom up. I leave for work. About 2 hours later, I get a call from my mom saying she just got done dropping her off. I was pissed. A few weeks later, an envelope of cash showed up in the mail with the quote, sorry, written on the note inside.
That's all you can do. That's all you can do. It's like, you know, cut your losses. You don't need to explain.
A snail mail with $100 in it. Like, yeah. Sorry.
Hey, can we talk?
Can we talk? Thankfully, it's no longer talked about. The worst part was working the next day and the puke cooking in the sun at the fence of my car.
Oh my God.
Glad I'm not doing the online dating thing anymore.
That is horrific. Horrific.
That's what.
Stripping naked.
And then just walking in the house past, like Susan's having her friends over for tea.
For bridge. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
Jesus Come on Christ. In, honey. Okay, strip.
I love moms. I gotta like when moms are momming, it is the best. Like,
my God.
Just like, it's okay, sweetie. I'll take care of it.
Oh my God. That was honestly one of my favorite bad date stories.
Wow.
Ever.
Oh, wow.
I am crying. Oh my Lord.
It being 3 p.m. in the afternoon, it that really sealed made it for me.
It really
yep. did. Yeah. I was picturing nighttime. I'm like, also, it's broad daylight. You got a girl leg out the window, like kicking your side mirror off, like freaking out. I'd be like, we got to go somewhere because someone's going to think I kidnapped you.
Mm-hmm. Like, right?
Oh my God.
Wow. Oh Amazing. My God. You guys need to take 5 and then we'll come back with the tainted love.
Yes.
Sounds good. And we're back.
Okay. Well, as I said earlier, this is kind of a wild case. It has some twisties and turnies in it. And this case is from Australia. I won't try and do an Australian accent.
Is this like the second one in a row that we've done in Australia? Didn't you do? Didn't somebody just do one?
Was Not Christina's me. In Australia?
No. It was in Dallas.
Yeah. No. Okay. So.
No.
This is the story of Natasha Ryan. And if you are from Australia, I know it's a big place, so maybe this is a blanket statement, but my guess is you've probably heard of Natasha Ryan or heard of this case. But it is not one that I was familiar with until a very convenient Medium article popped up in my inbox.
God
Gotta love
him.
Medium, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Natasha was born in 1984 in Rockhampton, Australia. She was the middle child with an older sister and younger brother. And from what we know about Natasha's childhood, it was fairly normal. Her father nicknamed her Grasshopper because she skipped the crawling phase and went straight to walking as a baby. They were middle class people, overall seemingly a pretty normal, loving family. And she seemed like an average happy child, but that all began to change after her parents got divorced. So she took her parents' divorce really hard. Her father moved out of the home, remarried, and then relocated to Queensland, which is about a 3-hour drive away. According to the thing I read, I'm not intimate with Australian geography. So not long after this, Natasha began acting out. She began experimenting with drugs and alcohol. I mean, the only drugs that I could really find that she was experimenting with were weed, but she started very young, you know, and self-harming. In 1998, Natasha was 14 years old and an eighth grader at Rockhampton High School when she met and, quote, fell in love with a man. Yes, a man named Scott Black, and he was 21 years old.
No,
she's 14.
Pedophile.
14.
14. She is an eighth grader. I have pictures of me at 14. I was a baby. Baby. Natasha's mother, Jenny, was obviously distressed by this and by Natasha's increasingly alarming behavior in general. And she forbade her daughter from seeing Scott. Like, absolutely not. That's what you would do. This led to almost daily fights, and Natasha storming out of the house would soon become a regular occurrence. She would call her boyfriend, Scott, to come pick her up and would sometimes be gone for a few hours to a day before returning home. On one occasion, in July of 1998, Natasha went out to walk the dog and didn't return. When this happened, Jenny called the police, who tracked her down later that week at an outdoor music venue with Scott, and soon discovered that the two had been staying in a hotel nearby.
With the dog?
I don't know what happened to the dog. I had that same question. I was like, did she just tie the dog to the mailbox and took off or what? Initially, they charged Scott with abduction, but that charge was eventually dropped.
What?
Mm-hmm.
How after about Natasha, the fact that it is illegal for a 21-year-old to have a sexual relationship with a 14-year-old? Yeah. We can't charge him with that for statutory?
I mean, who knows the laws in Australia? I don't know. I do believe,
based on some of the things that I was reading, that the age of consent is not 14. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine it would be, but...
Yeah. After Natasha got home, things seemed to settle a bit, and Natasha's mother thought that their relationship was improving. On the morning of August 31st, 1998, Jenny dropped Natasha off at school, as she always did, but Natasha never made it home that afternoon. And when Jenny went to the school to see if anyone had seen Natasha, her teacher confirmed that she did not attend any of her classes that day. So... though Natasha had obviously run away in the past, Jenny was alarmed. Usually when Natasha took off, it was after some kind of blow up at home. And Natasha seemed perfectly fine and normal that day whenever she dropped her off at school. Unsurprisingly, however, when Jenny went to the police to file a missing persons report, they were told that because Natasha had run away just 1 month earlier, that was likely the case this time. And they refused to send anyone to go look for her, telling Jenny to come back in 48 hours if Natasha didn't return.
It doesn't matter
if she ran away on her own. Right. She has to go home. She's 14. She's a minor. You have to go bring her home. Sorry.
You still have to do your fucking job.
Exactly.
Yes. She's a child.
What else are you doing?
I get it. It's annoying to have to do your job. We all feel
There's
annoyed
property
by having to do our jobs.
Needs to be protected.
Yeah, of course.
Seriously.
Well, they couldn't go looking for Natasha. They lent out their cop car to their friend that they met.
That's right. That's right.
They didn't have a vehicle. Okay. So when she didn't return after 48 hours... Jenny went back to the police, and thinking that Natasha was likely with her boyfriend, it really icks me out every time I say that. Like, so just know, like, it grosses me out to have to say that, but it's the easiest way to refer to him in this story. But they were like, she's most likely with Scott. So they went to Scott Black's home. But he insisted that Natasha was not there and that he hadn't seen her in days and didn't know where she was. Now, a little background.
I don't believe you.
A little background. Around this time in Rockhampton, which was a small city of about 68,000 people. So it's not a huge place. Several women and girls had gone missing. Julie Turner, Beverly Lego, Sylvia Benedetti had all disappeared. So when months went by and no one had seen or heard from Natasha, police began to fear that perhaps whoever had taken... the other women had also taken Natasha. As fear mounted, an extensive search was initiated. More than 100 volunteers rallied together in hopes that they would be able to find Natasha. I'm going to give a content warning for this next section for violent crimes involving a child. So just heads up. Then in April of 1999, 8 months after Natasha's disappearance, a 9-year-old girl named Kira Steinhardt disappeared when she was taking a shortcut through a vacant lot on her way home from school. An eyewitness to her attack and abduction eventually led to the arrest of a man named Leonard Frazier. Upon questioning, Frazier eventually broke down and confessed to investigators that he had raped and murdered Kira and agreed to take them to her body. Though he initially denied that he had anything to do with Natasha's disappearance, upon further questioning, he confessed to the murders of Sylvia, Beverly, Julie, and Natasha. Mm-hmm. He claimed that he had met her at a movie theater and, after offering her a ride home, attacked her in his car and hid her body in a pond, and even drew a map where authorities could locate Natasha's remains, but they weren't there. So Jenny and Robert held out hope that Natasha's body would be found so that they could have a proper burial for their daughter. But finally, in May of 2001, nearly 3 years after Natasha went missing, believing that she was a victim of what would later become known as the Rockhampton rapist, although he was also a murderer, Leonard Frazier, they held a memorial for Natasha on her 17th birthday. 8 days into the trial of Leonard Frazier in 2003, with Natasha's family, with Natasha's family present in the courtroom, the judge made an announcement that Frazier was innocent of Natasha's murder and would not be tried. Natasha's father was so shocked that he collapsed in court. Prosecutors went on to explain that they had received an anonymous note claiming that Natasha was alive and well and living in the home of Scott Black. When police arrived at Scott's home, they noticed that he was acting extremely agitated. Upon searching his house, they found the now 19-year-old Natasha hiding in a cupboard. It turns out that Natasha had run away deliberately and had been living in the home of Scott Black secretly for 5 years as her parents, police, and countless volunteers searched for her. She had lived in several of Scott's homes over the years, including one that was a mere 5 minutes from her parents' house or from her mother's house.
Holy
so
shit.
Awful.
Mm-hmm. Awful. Awful. I can't imagine.
How angry do you have to be, or how bad does your relationship have to be where you're okay with having your mother think that you're dead for 5 years? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Right. I mean, I think it's also
with your 14-year-old brain too. I mean, right. I think that's thinking.
That's the thing. And I think that we'll talk a little bit about it later, but this case is interesting to me. I mean, obviously there's layers here. We've got serial killer and the fact that she was found, she'd been living secretly in this house for all this time, all these things make it an interesting case. But also the way the public responded to Natasha, you have to remember this is a 14 year old child who was groomed by a 21 year old
man.
Absolutely.
And also there are things that I remember from being a teenager that sometimes when you fucked up, it's like that fear is so strong of like getting in trouble or disappointing your parents or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it just was just like, she just couldn't face that. You know what I mean? And the longer it goes, the worse it gets.
The worse it gets.
How do you come forward now that 100 people are searching for you and you know that you've made this, like, it's so much bigger than maybe you thought it would be at that point.
Right.
But for me, I'm always like, Scott Black was a 21-year-old man. Not only was he okay, seemingly, with like everyone thinking Natasha was dead, putting her family through that and the entire community through that, he was also okay with, because it would later be revealed, you know, like she didn't go outside. She went outside only at nighttime. She stayed inside with the blinds closed. She stopped going to school, obviously. So she's just cooking, cleaning, sewing, and hanging out on the internet. That's all she's doing. And the only thing that she said that she did was at nighttime, they would occasionally go to a local beach. But he's also okay then with this person that he loves, quote unquote, spending her entire teenage years in a dark house alone without family or friend support. Like, to me, I'm just like, something obviously is very wrong with Scott.
Well, okay? Yeah.
So, obviously. I mean, he's a pedophile. So right. I think we, yeah.
I think, you know, and I'm getting ahead in this story a little bit, but I think the response to Natasha was, of course, there's anger. Like, there's anger there. I mean, right. her mother even says that her first reaction was anger. But so much got put on Natasha where I'm just like, are we not going to talk about, like,
right.
fucking Scott?
Like, right.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Like, because the fact is regardless of whether it was her quote unquote choice to go there or not, it's his.
He's an adult. The
adult here. Right. And he is guilty of basically kidnapping. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no two ways about it. Right. Like, this man has groomed this person to. Yeah, this is
right. And after so much time too, she's only spending time with Scott. Like, she would say that he worked as a milk delivery man, and his coworkers at the milk factory had no idea that Natasha was living in the house, and he would occasionally have people over, but she would hide in the cupboard in the bedroom upstairs anytime he had people over to the house. So no one knew she
That's
was there.
Weird.
Yeah, it's super weird. So she's only interacting with Scott for all these years. And I'm sure that that does something to your brain, too. Yep,
absolutely.
You know, like, you're relying on this person. Yeah, you're relying on him for everything. And it's like, yes, she mm-hmm. could leave. She could have left. You know, she made choices. Well, but like,
could she have?
Right.
We don't know that.
In theory, she was she freely roamed the house, like, and by her own admission, like, she was not a prisoner. Like, she says she wanted to be there. But I'm just saying,
yeah, her,
like,
14-year-old brain said yeah. she wanted to be there.
Right.
It's
right.
just, you just aren't, there's yeah. no logical, like, right. just insane. That's insane to say that a 14-year-old wanted to stay there. It's just,
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So, when Natasha saw that Leonard Fraser was going to go down for her murder, she had a pang of conscience. about 3 weeks before the trial, she contacted the helpline of a children's counseling service. Using the name Sally, she told the counselor that she was a runaway, that she was living with her boyfriend, and that a man was about to go to trial for her murder. On April 2nd, 2003, the counselor anonymously relayed her message to the police, but the officer on duty was unable to trace the call. I'm like, maybe go back to Scott's house. If you suspect that this is maybe Natasha, like,
yeah,
maybe go check that out again. You know, how many, like, killers do you have going on trial where there's not a body that's been found? I feel like the list is fairly small. Mm-hmm, like, you know, mm-hmm. Shortly afterward, the Rockhampton police received an anonymous letter speculated to have been written by a relative of Scott's with an enclosed phone number claiming Ryan was alive and well. After prosecutors made the announcement that they had found Natasha during the trial, they asked her father, Robert, to make a phone call to confirm the girl they found was indeed his daughter. When he did, he asked the woman who came on the line for her nickname that she'd been given as a child to ensure he wasn't dealing with an imposter. Right. And she said, "Dad, it's me, Grasshopper. I love you and I'm sorry."
Oh,
wow.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. So Jenny's reaction, as I said earlier, Natasha's mother, her first reaction that, like, not only was her daughter alive, but was living down the street, was understandably anger. Like, she was angry mm-hmm. that, like, her daughter had put her through all of this. But she said that as soon as she saw her daughter, everything just melted away and she was just grateful to have her back, that she was alive and okay, you know. Natasha went on to appear in court at what was to be her own murder trial, where she testified that she had not in fact been murdered by Leonard Fraser. The investigation into Natasha's disappearance had cost the city of Rockhampton approximately $151,000. Scott was ordered to repay $16,000.
That's it?
Yep. And in 2005, a judge sentenced him to a 3-year sentence for perjury, though 2 of those years were suspended after he pleaded guilty to lying to police about not knowing where Natasha was.
And so that's the only charge he had. Perjury. Mm-hmm.
He was never charged with statutory rape of a 14-year-old girl. Never charged.
Okay, cool.
So he spent 1 year in jail for that perjury charge, and that's it. And repaid $16,000 of the $151,000 that they spent looking for Natasha when he knew where she was the whole time. Natasha was only fined $1,000. She signed a contract with 60 Minutes and Australian magazine Women's Day, receiving more than $120,000 in exchange for exclusive interviews in which she reenacted hiding in a bedroom closet. You can find these pictures. There's just like pictures of her in a closet. Oof. She did end up reconciling with her parents and went on to become a nurse. She and Scott got married in 2008, and the couple sold photos of their wedding for $200,000. They now continue to live in Australia with their three children. So
it's
like
giving Mary Kay Letourneau.
It's giving. Yes, it is. It really is. Because it's like, this is the only person she's really ever been with. She spent 5 years seeing only him.
Yep.
And when this story broke, people were understandably angry because it was like they had been looking for her. They thought that she kind of, in their mind, took advantage of this horrible thing that was happening in Rockhampton, where this serial killer was loose. You know, and she disappeared and they counted her among those victims. And then she made hundreds of thousands of dollars selling her story after all of that.
Yeah.
So people
should not be able to profit off of.
Right. And people were angry. Like, they were really angry about it. But as we said already, and I think that being angry at her, even, it is understandable. Like, I understand that. However, that redirect a lot of that anger towards Scott. Scott needs to be on the receiving end of most of that. Yeah. Like, this is someone who groomed a 14-year-old eighth grader as an adult.
And then never completes any of her schooling.
Mm-mm.
This is right.
And was okay. And like I said, was okay with all of that. Like, was okay with, you know, like, okay with watching the city look for her, okay with lying to the police, okay with seeing her mom. Her mom gave interviews where she's like crying on the news. Like, you're okay with all of that. And then on top of that, you're okay with this person that you supposedly love spending their entire life inside, interacting with no one. There's something wrong with you, you know?
Like, oh, yeah.
So, So I just wrote that, like, surprisingly, or perhaps not, he received very little blowback from the public, from what I can tell about his role in this whole situation. Early 2000s, what a weird time.
Mm, absolutely.
Early mid 2000s, the aughts in general, strange time. Anyway, that's the story of Natasha Ryan. I had a whole spiel written down here, but I think we've already talked about it and gone into all of it already. But that is the absolutely bonkers story of Natasha Ryan.
Yeah, I can't believe we hadn't done that yet. Because as soon as you got to Leonard Fraser, I was like, oh, right. I know this story, and I remember it because of the anger that was heaped on the young girl. And it blows my mind. It makes me nervous for what kind of relationship she's in now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
Talking about control and narcissists and everything like that. This episode has got my blood boiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got my hackles up.
Heck yeah.
I don't like it.
Well, what are you guys watching this week?
Well, I'm still on the true crime train over here. I need to get off of it soon. Yeah. Like, it's about that time, you know, I think I've hit like maximum absorption. But I watched the Heaven's Gate documentary series on Max. About the Heaven's Gate cult. And that one I'd known quite a lot about because there's a really good podcast about it. But very interesting to like see the people. It's always different whenever you get to like see them talking about
Heaven's Gate's the white tennis shoes, right?
Yeah, the Nikes. Yeah. Yeah. Where they all wore like Star Trek uniforms and thought that they were being taken up in a UFO.
That's right.
So that, I mean, I find cult stuff so fascinating, especially ones like that, where, because I always say it, like, I have so much sympathy and empathy for people who fall for cults, because I think there's a cult for everybody. But it's always
this
extra.
Heaven's Gate is Christina's.
It's extra interesting to me when it's a cult I wouldn't fall for. And totally. Heaven's Gate is one I wouldn't have fallen for, because I would have been like, aliens, I'm out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Christina's like, I don't know. Listening. Maybe.
I'll get a little bit of more information here. Yeah, that program is, I didn't realize, or I guess never absorbed, like, how many people gave their life up, like, in
it
that.
Is
I forget
the largest to this day. It is the largest mass suicide on U.S. soil.
Yeah.
So yeah. It was something like 39 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Ugh. We are finishing up our Oscars kick just in time. So this week we watched Poor Things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Chris,
how
really
was it?
That.
Your face
You're
is telling
laughing.
Me.
This movie is banana sandwich. It's actually hysterical. It's so funny. Mark Ruffalo is so funny in this movie. It's
I
so
love
weird.
Him. I we got to get him in an FMK soon, because I love Mark Ruffalo.
No, I definitely recommend it. It's a very strange take on Frankenstein's monster. Is kind of the story, and it's irreverent, it's weird, it's very beautifully shot, it's funny, so I liked it. I would recommend it.
Awesome.
Nice. I just started with Chris, Catch Me a Killer. If you liked, what's the guys who started the BAU? There was that series on Netflix.
Mindhunter,
yeah. Thank you. If you liked Mindhunter, it's got traces of that. It's a true story. It's about this female psychologist who was, I think, originally a journalist, became a psychologist, started working as the first, basically, like, developed BAU in South Africa. And it's kind of her stories of, like, you know, her.
What's it called, like, again? Sorry.
Catch Me a Killer.
Catch Me a Killer. Okay.
Catch Me a Killer. It's, it is, like I said, it's based on true stories. So it's.
I love that I just said I was going to get off the train. Well, and then I was just like, what is it? I might need to watch it.
Let me write this down real quick. It's on BritBox, but it's really good. It's really good. It has that real Mindhunter vibe to it, you know, like, where you're just like really digging into the psyche of, you know, what makes people, you know,
evil
profiles. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God. I cannot believe I can't believe I didn't tell you guys this earlier. So Keegan knows, and I think I texted this in the My Worst Date thread, but so I had read, like, a while ago, A Crown of Thorns and Roses. So I started the Crescent City book. And so A Court of Thorn and Roses is set. It's like,
I can never remember what the title of that book is. That's what I'm just like, ACOTAR. It's because I can't. ACOTAR. It's too long.
Yeah.
There's too much happening.
It's like a fantasy book, right? It's like a Beauty and the Beast. And it's like, I don't know, if you were to set it in a time frame, you would set it in, like, the medieval times or whatever.
So it's like fairies and stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
So I started reading Crescent City, which takes place, like, super far in the future, but it has all these mystical creatures, but it's, like, modern. They have phones and shit, and they text each other. And I was like, I fucking hate this. I hate it so much. I hate it. I'm so angry. But I'm, like, stuck on a plane because I had to go to this conference. I was like, whatever. And I'm, like, reading it. So then when I get on the plane to get back, I'm almost to the end of this book.
Oh my God.
No.
The way that, like, I'm on a Southwest flight reading this book, what happens at the end is, like, it's not her friend, it's like a coworker of hers, is a little fire sprite that's, like, kind of like her annoying sidekick, like, the whole book. And she has to go up against this big monster. And this
spoiler
fire,
alerts.
Yeah, spoiler.
Yeah, it's
spoiler
been out
alert
for
anybody
time.
Who wants to read it and hasn't yet. Or
yeah.
So this fire sprite is like a servant or whatever. And so she's like, gives up her life to save the main character. And she's like, but the way it was written, it was like this whole thing. I start crying.
No.
Crying girl. On a Southwest flight about a book I don't even like. And it stuck with me. And I still like get teary thinking about,
oh my God,
this little fire sprite. This one scene was just so powerful. Like Bryce's dog almost gets like murdered. And then this fire sprite is like, I will be brave because my friends are with me. And I will... I am the Haba of the blah 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 sprites, and like gives up her life, and I'm like, oh my God!
I gotta be for real though. This is her servant. We gotta stop it with that shit. We have to stop it with that narrative of just like the undying loyal like butler, you know, where it's just like, I will fucking die. I will give up my whole life for you. Like, girl, there is not any employer I have ever had.
Listen, Dobby, that I feel that way about. Do that.
It was a Dobby moment, and Bryce Bryce had like freed her.
Dobby.
Bryce had freed her, and it was a Dobby moment, is what it was. Okay. But I was just like, I have never been more embarrassed in my life. I'm in an aisle seat of a Southwest flight, crying.
Oh my God! The person next to you is just like,
is this a walk to remember your reading?
keep joking. I'll make you watch The Notebook.
God damn it.
Listen, I never almost did it. I almost was like, it was my turn to pick the Tainted Love movie, and I almost picked The Notebook, but I didn't want to do two Nicholas Sparks back to back. I didn't want to do that to us.
Yeah. You know. Bless you, my child.
Oh, man. Well, if you guys have something that we should watch, if you have a terrible date story, if you just want to join in the fun, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com, and we love you so much.
Cheers.